While the U.S. House of Representatives today is taking up President Biden's COVID relief bill, yesterday the body passed a piece of legislation referred to as the Equality Act. It's an amendment to the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and the bill gives explicit protections to people based on gender identity and sexual orientation. Supporters of the bill say it would shore up what's currently more of a patchwork of LGBTQ protections in just some states, while other states don't have their own anti-discrimination laws. Meanwhile, some opposition to the bill centers around concepts of religious freedom and protections for women. Our guest for this conversation is Christy Mallory from the UCLA School of Law. She focuses on state and local laws and policies that affect members of the LGBTQ community. She also happens to be a native of Mequon. Christy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Keely.
You're legal director at the Williams Institute. Tell us about the mission of that institute.
Yeah, the Williams Institute is a research center based at UCLA, dedicated to conducting rigorous and credible research on sexual orientation and gender identity law and public policy. And it's our goal to disseminate this research to policymakers and judges, the media, the public, and other stakeholders to really ensure that legal decisions and policy decisions that impact LGBTQ people are based on data and facts.
We're talking about what's been called the Equality Act, and this might sound familiar to some people. How long has this legislation been in the works?
Oh, gosh. You know, some iterations of this bill have been around going back decades, back to the 70s when lawmakers first wanted to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation in employment. It has repeatedly come up in Congress and after Congress after Congress, and over the years has been expanded, you know, in this way you just described, to now prohibit discrimination not only based on sexual orientation, but also based on gender identity. So that is discrimination against transgender people. And the bill has also been expanded over the years to reach a variety of different areas of life. So it's no longer confined to employment non-discrimination, but now we're seeing these protections for education and credit, jury service, public accommodations, housing, really the full slate of civil rights laws across the country.
We're talking with Christy Mallory with UCLA's School of Law. She's our guest talking about equality and legal protections. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the legal and policy implications of the legislation that is in Congress right now? Is this something better left up to individual states and local governments to manage, or do you think that we need national legislation? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Christy, the House passed a similar bill in 2019, but it didn't go anywhere. What happened?
Yeah, it didn't go anywhere. It didn't even get brought up in the Senate. But of course, we've seen some huge changes in Congress this year. So I think it's an exciting time. Obviously, all eyes are on the Senate right now. I think we expected the House to pass it. But what will happen in the Senate is anyone's guess.
And in the House, we saw three Republicans vote with all of the Democrats on this measure. Does that bipartisanship tell us anything, or are we really dealing with two completely different entities here when it comes to how the House and the Senate might swing?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, so you mentioned a patchwork of state laws that protect people from discrimination based on these characteristics already. So we kind of have an understanding of the political landscape around these laws based on the experiences of these states. In recent years, as more states and localities have begun to pass these protections, we see the support become more bipartisan. I think it used to be thought of as really a Democrats' issue, but that's no longer the case anymore. State by state, locality by locality, we are seeing more Republicans really get on board to support equality.
Do you see much variation among state laws, or are they fairly similar in what they're trying to do?
Yeah. So the states that have these legal protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, those laws look pretty consistent across the states. What is inconsistent is, you know, we have this big divide. We have states that include those characteristics in their non-discrimination laws, and then we have the states that don't. So I teach a class at the UCLA School of Law, and each year I ask my students which state they think was the first to pass a sexual orientation non-discrimination law. And every year, without fail, they guess the same few. I hear California, Massachusetts, Oregon, but it was actually none of those. The first state to pass a law prohibiting sexual orientation discrimination was, and maybe some of the listeners already know this, but it was Wisconsin back in 1982. So Wisconsin really led the way there. But since then, we've seen 22 more states follow. And so now about half the U.S. adult population is already covered by these non-discrimination protections at the state level. The other half, of course, are living in states without these statewide protections, but many live in localities with the protections. So that's kind of what people are talking about when they refer to this patchwork of protections that exist at the state and local level.
The laws are one thing, the way that they're written and what they do, but it's another thing to apply them. So from a policy standpoint, what more can you tell us about how these anti-discrimination laws at the state and local level are implemented?
Yeah, so, you know, non-discrimination laws serve two main functions, really. They both act as a deterrent to discrimination, and this is sort of why the Equality Act would also help employers, businesses, and other entities that would be covered under the act, because it helps them to know what the law is in a clear way. And we just don't have that situation for LGBTQ people right now in the U.S. So by bringing these clear nationwide protections, entities will know what's expected of them. People will also know that they have these protections, which is beneficial as well. But then the other main goal of non-discrimination laws, of course, is to remedy discrimination where it's already happened. So just like we know, race discrimination is not over in this country just because we have civil rights laws going back to the 60s prohibiting such discrimination against people of color in the U.S. So, of course, we will continue to see discrimination occur. We continue to see discrimination against LGBTQ people occur in the states that have these laws in place. But they really do make a difference. They're symbolically important. They make people feel better, feel less fear. They're not worried about hiding who they are at work to their coworkers when they're having a conversation around the water cooler. And they also, you know, they provide remedies to people. So if discrimination has happened, people are able to go to court and seek remedies for what they've experienced, monetary damages. You know, and that in itself can also serve as a deterrent to employers. Sometimes hearing about another employer involved in a high profile lawsuit where a plaintiff happened to recover a lot of money kind of sends a message to them that this is not okay.
What about the flip side of being in court? Are states having to defend those laws in court?
You know, for the most part, no. Again, these laws have gone back decades to Wisconsin's in 1982, and they've caused very little problems. So I think that's why we're in an interesting spot with the Equality Act, too, is this these kind of protections, this method of protecting people has been tested. We've seen that the sky does not fall when states pass laws that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. They're implemented just like other laws that prohibit discrimination against people based on race and sex and religion. The administrative agencies that handle these laws know how to do it. The courts know how to do it. People know how to follow them. So this is really not new, what's in the Equality Act. Does it shore up some of these gaps? Yes. Does it make sure people have nationwide protections in all areas? Yes. Does it clarify the law? Of course. But it's really just building on all this progress we've already seen to get those protections just across the finish line.
We're talking with Christy Mallory from the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law, and we're looking at the legal and policy implications of the Equality Act, which the U.S. House passed yesterday. It's headed over to the Senate. You are part of this conversation. Call 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about what's happening right now when it comes to protected classes? Do you think that this is something better left up to individual states and local governments to manage? Or do you think that the federal government needs to push for a national standard right now? What would you like to see lawmakers discuss or change as this bill moves forward? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. There's a line for you there. Or you can email us your questions at ideas@WPR.org. We continue this conversation next on Central Time. We're talking about the Equality Act the House of Representatives passed yesterday and the legal and policy implications it could have if it moves forward through the Senate. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our guest is Christy Mallory. She's the legal director at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law. And here on the Ideas Network, we want to hear from you. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Ask us your question. We've got Will Flump from Platteville on the line. Hi, Will.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question was, how does the Equality Act change the precedent set in June 2020 with Gorsuch writing the majority on the joint discrimination cases for Title VII, Title IX that includes transgender and other LGBTQ identities under those laws?
Yeah, well, thanks so much for that question about the Supreme Court decision that came in June of last year. Christy.
Yeah, thanks, Will. That's a really great question. So as you've mentioned, the legal landscape in this area really changed pretty significantly through that decision issued by the Supreme Court in a case called Bostock versus Clayton County. So the case was brought by employees who had been discriminated against by their employers based on their sexual orientation and gender identity. So the case was brought under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which is our federal non-discrimination law that prohibits employment discrimination based on race, sex, national origin, and a bunch of other characteristics. And what was important there, though, is just like we're talking about the Equality Act, that law does not expressly include the terms sexual orientation and gender identity. But what these employees argued is that discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity violated Title VII's prohibition on sex discrimination. So the logic there in that argument was that sexual orientation and gender identity discriminations are so intertwined and inseparable from sex discrimination that they are really forms of sex discrimination that's illegal under that law. Essentially, that an employer could not possibly discriminate against an LGBTQ person without also discriminating against them based on their sex. And a majority of the court agreed with this in a pretty surprising 6-3 holding that I think many people were at first maybe, you know, I think it kind of struck a lot of people, especially in my field as well. That's a number I wasn't expecting to come out of the court here. But when you look at the history of this claim, these arguments, these type of cases, lower courts had been finding this for a long time, finding that sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination were forms of sex discrimination. So in a sense, it really wasn't new. It was just the Supreme Court affirming the decision of many, many lower courts who had already held this. So the question really was, how does the Equality Act interact with and affect this decision or vice versa? So that decision, of course, I said that the sex non-discrimination piece in Title VII was really the essential hook there. So many of the federal non-discrimination laws prohibit discrimination based on sex. And we look at the Bostock case and we think, well, yeah, all of those laws should be interpreted with the court's decision here. Other courts and even the Supreme Court often look to Title VII case law when figuring out how to interpret analogous provisions in other laws like the Fair Housing Act or Title IX or these things. So we think, yeah, this probably extends to all sex non-discrimination laws. But what the Equality Act does is, first of all, it clearly says, yes, these are protected characteristics in all these other laws. So we don't have to now rely on other courts looking at what the Supreme Court did here and figuring out should it apply to this law too. You run the risk in that of courts in different areas coming to different conclusions. So the Equality Act cuts out all of that and just makes these protections applicable to all underlying civil rights laws. The other important thing that the Equality Act does is adds a sex non-discrimination protections to some civil rights laws where that characteristic is not already included. So people may not know that the federal public accommodations non-discrimination law doesn't already prohibit discrimination based on sex. And so public accommodations is sort of a legal term that refers to certain types of businesses and other establishments that serve the public. So as of right now, if a woman experienced public accommodations discrimination based on her sex, she has no recourse under federal law. So the equality makes that change too. So just going back to what it would look like if we only had Bostock and not the Equality Act, public accommodations is a huge area that's left out because you don't have that sex non-discrimination hook in the law to rely on the Bostock reasoning.
Thanks so much for the call, Will. We appreciate it. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234 as we talk with the legal director at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law. Christy Mallory's work is centered around laws and policies that affect members of the LGBTQ community. And we've got Joan from Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
Hi there.
What are you thinking about in this conversation?
I just had a question about the Equality Act and how it would help LGBTQ women of color specifically.
Just wondering, sure, if there's anything specific to people of color in that. Thanks so much for the question, June. Christy, what are we dealing with the Equality Act?
Yeah, that's a really great question, too. So, you know, what we see in the data, when we look at how LGBTQ people experience discrimination and experience the hardships that result from discrimination, like health impacts and economic instability, we see that oftentimes LGBTQ people of color and LGBTQ women are hardest hit. The disparities that we've seen between non-LGBTQ people and LGBTQ people are exacerbated for people who have other marginalized characteristics. And so, you know, we also see when people actually experience, so I'm talking about data here and sort of aggregate level disparities, but when we see how people experience discrimination in the world, often cases are brought by LGBTQ women, LGBTQ women of color, other LGBTQ people of color, and they have experienced various compounded forms of discrimination, for example, by the same employer. What sometimes happens in those cases is the courts will look at the evidence that the plaintiffs have marshaled and they'll say, oh, well, you know, this actually looks mostly like sexual orientation discrimination and not really because of your race or sex. So you don't have a viable claim here. So we've actually seen that happen in courts where they try to parse out what the discrimination looks like. It's really hard often to separate discrimination based on sex and based on sexual orientation and gender identity, which the Bostock decision really affirmed. So having these protections in place means that people with multiple marginalized identities will ensure that all of their identities are protected from discrimination.
There's an argument here with the Equality Act about the potential damage to women's athletics, the privacy of women's locker rooms and bathrooms, specifically when it comes to trans people who identify as female. How is this argument playing out?
Yeah. So, you know, some opponents of non-discrimination laws have made those claims that these laws may jeopardize privacy or safety in these facilities. But research and experience just shows that this is really not the case. So like I mentioned before, many states and localities already have these non-discrimination laws in place. And like we've talked about, have had them for decades. And we just don't see these types of problems arise. At the Williams Institute, we actually did a study a few years ago, which showed that non-discrimination laws were not associated with any increase in crimes in bathrooms or other shared facilities. And even beyond that, there are existing laws all over the place in the U.S. that protect people from crimes in bathrooms. And these are the laws that should and already do address the issues that opponents are pointing to. These things aren't happening because of the presence or absence of a non-discrimination law. They're happening and need to be dealt with the law in a different way.
Another aspect of this when it comes to opposition to this bill is that it would infringe on legally protected religious freedom. Help us understand what the legal basis for that argument is.
Yeah, so some people have also claimed that laws that prohibit discrimination based on their on people's sexual orientation and gender identity will burden religious beliefs or religious exercise. And again, I'm just going to stress that we have decades of experience with this, and we know how these laws work. We know that that is not happening. And, you know, I want to point out, too, that existing federal civil rights laws that the Equality Act modifies. Again, the Equality Act is not really a standalone bill, but comes in and amends and updates the Civil Rights Act. So these laws have carve-outs already for religious organizations, which give them a lot of freedom in who to hire, for example. And the Constitution also protects hiring decisions for religious institutions to a significant degree. Similarly, state laws have these carve-outs. So, you know, religious organizations will be pretty much free to operate as they always have under these existing laws. And again, because of the Bostock decision, this has already happened to some degree, right? The horse is already out of the barn a little bit here. So then, you know, there's this other claim that centers around maybe not a religious organization's practices, but religious people acting out in the world as employers or as owners of a business. So that the analysis there is a little bit different, because once an employer or retailer or whoever enters the public sphere to serve customers or to hire a bunch of employees, the rules change a bit. And in those cases, history and lawmakers have decided that non-discrimination laws are really important and serve the government's and society's interest in eradicating discrimination and ensuring equal treatment of all Americans. And that's really what's going on here, is when you enter that public space, you know, different rules apply.
Right. Christy, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Christy Mallory is legal director at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law.